Okay. If you recall last week, I just want to show you something from the Nesivah Shalom from yesterday's Parsha, which is very similar to an idea which we had from the Netziv, which I didn't bring. I thought it was here. You remember the Netziv had an idea about the difference between by the Eitz HaChayim, to say that there was a natural way that the world was created, and then because man ate from the Eitz HaDas, what he did was he fell from a higher level, which would have been total devotion and dveikus to Hashem, to the world of nature. That's how he put it.
Isn't that a Christian viewpoint for original sin?
Okay, so we do have a notion of an original sin. We just don't look at it the way they do, the chet of Adam, right? We do have that concept. The only difference is, like the Rav would explain, is that man never existed on that plateau. That we're simply using an allegory to show you how man lives in this world. So an idea from this, which I saw yesterday in the Siva Shalom, which is amazing. It says, "Shmi Hashem lo nadati lehem." Remember, it says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe vayomer lo ani Hashem vayirei al Avraham al Yitzchak v'Yaakov bekel Shaddai u'shmi havaya lo nadati lehem." Right? I appeared in front of the Avos in the name of bekel Shaddai, but now with you, I'm going to be like havaya. But as far as the others were concerned, the Shem Havayat Lo Nodati Lahem. Now, Rashi points out, Lo Nodati means I didn't let them know, I didn't show them it, but it doesn't mean Lo Hodati. I did let them know about it. They knew about it. What is the difference between the two of Shem Havaya and the Shem Hashem? Levar Ha'inyan Shehan Hoga Bimeha Avos Ha'isarak B'Shem Shalkai Ushmi Havaya lo nadati lehem, ve'ilu b'yitzias Mitzrayim. During the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Hanaga was in Havaya. Yeshlom adas mashakasev harav hakadosh hamagid mekushnitz. Dekasher bara kadosh baruch hu sa'olam od b'terem kol yitzias nivra. When God created the world, kvar nikva kol seder hanaga shel habriya. The entire history was already set. Listen to the words first. Kvar Nikva was already Kavua, the Seder Hanhaga, the ways of the world, Shel Habriya, Uzman Kol HaMa'oros VaHamakarim SheYikru Atzof Kol HaDoros. The entire history is already Kavua from the time of the creation. Okay. B'toch HaHanhaga HaTva'it, within this Hanhaga, this natural way of the world, yesh hanhaga penimit, there's a hidden hanhaga, al das ofan betoch ofan, within, you know, secrets within secrets, shehi hanhaga elyona lamala mikol seyde v'luach hasmanim, which is higher than history, v'hi api avodosam shal Yisrael, and this is conducted according to our avoda. Through our actions, we change the history that was kavua. That's the original sin, however you want to put it. If Adam Harishon would have succeeded in the first nisayon and not eat from the Eitz HaDas, Hayanishlam az hatikun hagomer v'shuv lahiyot tzorach b'chol hatzoros v'agolios. We would have remained on that original plateau, whatever that was, v'lo hayotzor, and there never would have been any more tzoros. V'cheinim Yisrael lo yechotem hayanimna b'churban beis hamikdash. It's true, you know. The Rav used to say, I remember. Were you in share that yet? We did shavuos together.
No.
So the Rav is
shavuos.
Gemara Shavuos. So we learn in Gemara Shavuos, and in there's a whole discussion about Kitcha Shaisa, Kitcha Liyasa Lovo, whether the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash was still present today. And in there he had a whole discussion about, during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, whether they fasted or not. Did they fast for the Beis Tisha B'Av during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash? And the Rav said, yes, they did fast. Why were they fasting? Because, as he put it, it was very eerie. I remember the day outside, it was like, I was also very sick, I had bronchitis, and outside it was pitch black. At 11 o'clock in the morning, it was about to really storm, and the Rav is saying that the ghost of the original base of the original Churban, or the ghost of the second Churban, was ever present in the second Beis HaMikdash. In other words, it was destined. They knew that the Beis HaMikdash was to be destroyed. That was al pi hateva. However, had we done tshuva, had we changed, it would not have been destroyed. That's what he's trying to say. It is kavua, but we have the ability to change it. Uche'en ze isa, he quotes his father from Slonim, the Mavar Bestiris Machazal, Adam Nidim or Rosh Hashanah, Adam Nidim or Kol Yom. You're judged on Rosh Hashanah and you judge every day. Why are you judged every day? Shiyesh Hanhoga Abi Seder is Man HaNikva Abi HaDin, but Rosh Hashanah Kol Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, we're already predestined. This is what your year is going to look like. However, Yesh Hanhoga Penimus, he lost Shehila Malame Azman, Mikol Inyane Seder Mishtar. However, there's another ability through tshuva, through acts, through avodas Hashem, for these things to change. Now he says, "Va'al dazeh." I'm going to explain to you what is the difference between havaya, shem shakai. Al dazeh yeshavar inyan hanoga shem shakai v'shem havaya. The inyan shem shakai hu shem hatsimtsum sha'omel olam odai. God created the world, and this will fit in very nicely with the notion of the initial bang, the bang theory, or black hole, whatever you want to say. There was, God started the process, and it expanded the universe, and expanded until the time he said the olam die. No more expansion. Kidisa b'chazal, shebe'eshin nivra ha-rakiya ho-yim espashed v'holech b'ligvul. When he created the rakiya, it just began to extend. Ad she'omer kodesh baruch hu, olam adai. V'netza rakiya m'lispashed od. And that was, it was running according to a certain Seder. Okay? We call that the laws of nature. What happened then? Then he'll say, during the time of the Avos, we had no reason, the others had no reason for the world to change according to their needs, to go to a shame, to shame havaya. Bimei ha'ovo shehoisa b'shem shakai shom ha'tzimtzum sheyurak hanhoga tzva'is. It was only a natural way of living. U'shemi havaya lo nadati lehem. Shebimei amom nimtza b'tara hanhoga nisus ha'remuza b'shem. They never saw it. V'rak b'yitzias mitzrayim Niskalsa b'chidush hanhoga b'shem havaya. Only with Yitzias Mitzrayim now it changes, it turns around. Now he participates. What does it mean that he participates? He changes the natural way for our benefit. And he only does it when it's absolutely necessary. V'tam shinui hanhoga b'yitzias Mitzrayim. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu eino misnahig b'hanhoga ha'aliyona hazos. Ki im m'shoa shemukrochem lo. And God only does this when he has to do it. So now, just to say it, because that's not our topic, but in other words, very similar to what the Netziv was saying, right? The world is created according to the laws of nature. That's how the world, that's the way the world governs itself. Or as Netziv said it, Bereshis Bor Elokim, B'midas Hadin. Simultaneously, there is a din of Rachamim. What he is saying, the Siva Shalom, is the world was created al pi a seder of Tvois. Now there are times that things are required for God's participation. How do we get God to participate? How do we get God to change something of nature? Through Avodas Hashem. Through our Avodas Hashem, that's how God will change what is destined. Let me put it differently in nomenclature that I would say. So I've always believed, So when a person becomes ill, there are two ways of looking at it. I mean, it's probably because anyway you have this, you always have two ways. To me, it's not that when a person becomes ill, that someone should assume that it's a punishment from Hashem. In my way of thinking, and when I say my way of thinking, you know, we say Yud Bei Sha'arim, the Shemayim. There are 12 different Sha'arim, the windows going into Shemayim. We say that for Nusach Tefillah, right? You daven Ashkenaz, another person daven Sfarad, another one davens, you know, Nusach Chabad. It's not that one is correct versus the other one. Everyone has their own Nusach, because there are different ways of approaches to Hashem, and I think there are also different ways to have a Hashkafa that speaks to you in your Avodas Hashem. My understanding of when we talk about the person who's, let's say, is ill, doesn't necessarily mean that it's a punishment from God. If a person sits and smokes 18 packs of cigarettes a day, so God punished me because he gave me lung cancer. Could be you happen to have gotten lung cancer because you spent a fortune smoking cigarettes. Could be, right? What does that mean? When God created the world, he created the world according to this cause and effect. His cause and effect, you know, I'm watching Game of Thrones. Hope that no one hears that. I'm watching Game of Thrones. What is Game of Thrones really about? The mighty is always destroying and killing the people who are soft, the people who are not as strong. That's the way of the world. That's the natural cause and effect of the world. It has been. The mighty have always been. America, which we say is a Medina Shel Chesed. I mean, that's really, I think, what how Ramosha referred to it was like, it's like a novelty that now we're trying, in modern times, we're starting to, you know, find liberty. But it's a natural event when you talk about the Holocaust. It's not that, you know, the Hitler could never have come about without thousands of years of mamish, brutal anti-Semitism. We were trained, the world was trained of utter hatred of one people. It took that, and then, I don't mean it's a natural result, because everything they did was really unnatural. It was just too much. But in other words, what the Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, he says, I create a world. I let the world run according to nature. Or as he had in mind, he knew the history. I mean, based on man's decisions, how he acts, this is how the world will continue. However,
there's one exception to that, though.
Okay.
That's the Jewish people. Because if you go by all the laws of natural history and science and all this,
so
we shouldn't even be here anymore.
Right. So, okay. What's happening, what happens with the laws of nature is that through, but now when I do an Avodas Hashem, meaning, let's say through my tefillas, what am I doing? I know what nature is. I know that this is the natural state of affair that I'm in right now. Through tefillah, what I'm asking the Kadosh Baruch Hu to do is through his intervention to undo the natural state of affairs for me or for Klal Yisrael or for whatever wherever I'm davening about. That's how I think. And he goes on, and this is a musa, it's a beautiful, beautiful musa. But it's really Hasidish. He said, if every one of us is in a gullus, we're all in a gullus of some sort in our own minds, in our own ways, and if you have a tzara that you really want to overcome, he says, it's not enough to live just in the world of almost like only following an Avodas Hashem, simple following the mitzvahs. He really is quoting an idea from Tanya, is that even the mutter, Kadesh is your Kadesh Atzmach, I mean, even in the mutter, even that which what you do is permitted, as Tanya says, whenever you're eating, of course you're permitted to eat, but even when you're eating, you should have in mind, you're doing is not simply for myself, but for the Avodas Hashem, in order to have more Cheshek, in order to learn more, etc., etc. Because you have to live on a higher level, the supernatural, right? If you live on that level, so you're coming closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, him to change your world. So it's a beautiful idea. But I'm saying, I want to bring this down to say this is very similar to the Netziv. Okay, let's go to Rabbi Lam. I think it's page 14. Comes after 13. Right before 50.
Got it. Thank you for your help.
The later rabbinical authorities, he's trying to explain different ideas that we find. His first paragraph over here, he says, first we must turn to a question of developing morality, new moral notions that surpass those of the past. The notion of a moral development in Judaism should not be confused with the new morality of the middle to the late 1900s. The latter did not seek to improve on or elevate accepted individual moral principles, but attempted an entire overhaul of conventional morality in order to make it conform to new practices, such that the Moors were now blessed as morals. Now, he's referring to his time. He says that our approach, a modern approach, for example, to homosexuality, is a new morality. He says I'm not referring to that aspect of, because we're acting in different lashon in an immoral fashion, doesn't mean that now Torah has to conform to our immoral fashion. That he says, I'm not referring to that. He says the later rabbinical authorities can generate stringencies going beyond biblical laws is not an altogether unknown idea in Jewish life, right? The idea of the chumrah, the idea of a geder. Thus, the principle of halacha accepted in practice is this: the sages established the views in place of contrary Torah legislation, where the action they forbade is passive. While an extensive review of this principle is beyond the scope of this paper, it should be pointed out that sages imposed their rulings even in the face of opposition to biblical law for a number of reasons, including the protection of workers from losing their pay, spare certain types of mamzerim from the taint of bastardy, to enhance sexual morality, and many other such cases. A significant case in point is that of the law of Yibum, which is biblical in origin. If a man dies childless, it is the responsibility of his brother to carry his widow.
Married.
That's it. Should he refuse, he must undergo the ceremony of chalitza, which exposes him to a degree of proprium. The Ashkenazic Rishonim decreed on the basis of debate in the Talmud that Yibum be prescribed and only chalitza be performed. The reason? If the surviving brother does not have purity of intentions, he engages in relations in his earnest-will sister-in-law for reasons of sexual gratification rather than fulfillment of the mitzvah, he is committing incest. And therefore, the Ashkenazic poskim said, no more Yibum, we're only going to do chalitza. Similarly, having a lesser cause of astonishment, is an acknowledged principle amongst poskim that non-Jews should not appear holier than the people of Israel. And he gives the example of the Marsham about not smoking on Tisha B'Av. I would go even further. Tosfos says, the reason why a Jew cannot commit abortion is because it's also for Ben Noach to commit abortion. How could it be that they're usher, that and we would be mutter? It's even more of, I think, an appropriate example. Should not the same reasoning apply to commandments concerning Amalek and seven nations? The fact that the civilized world had begun to abhor genocide ever since the beginning of World War II was unquestionably a major contribution to morality. Even if this particular aversion is honored more in breach than in practice. But if we accept the concept of a developing morality in Judaism, annoying and disconcerting problems persist. Thus, on the one hand, does not the assertion of a developing morality, moral sensibility, imply that the original position was immoral by our newer standards and nevertheless was sanctified by Torah law, which we profess to be eternal and indisputably sacred? On the other hand, is it possible that the Torah would deny to any generation the right to abide by a stricter moral code, even if this latter is not itself explicitly located within the classic texts of Judaism? Is there no room in Judaism for autonomous moral judgment especially when it is derived, as in our case, from bitter historic experience. Very difficult concept that the Lamb is putting forward. Basically, starting off from this notion, we know the Chazal have the right to extend the Torah in certain areas. They're allowed to say that even though something is mutter in the Torah, we're going to say that it's usher for various reasons. Blowing shofar, right? Now I blow it on Shabbos. What is that? That's the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon said, we're worried, Gezerah Shemei Avreinu Dalet Amos. We're worried that maybe you're going to carry it in Dalet Amos for Shus HaRambam. And therefore we're gonna say, don't follow this mitzvah on this day.
Rabbi Brett, Rabbi Kellermer once gave a drasha in which he spoke about the Akedah, where Hashem gave Abraham specific instruction to, you know, to sacrifice himself. And so he was ready to do it, and the angel interfered. The angel came down and said, don't do this, here's a ram. So Abraham had a decision to make. Now, I'm repeating what Rabbi Kellermer said. He had a decision to make. He could either go with the order by the Eibishter, by God, right, to kill Yitzchak, or listen to an angel, which was not God. So what did he choose? He made an autonomous decision not to sacrifice Yitzchak, to listen to the Malach. Okay, and so we know what happened. Wasn't that an autonomous, personal, moral decision that Abraham made?
But it's from a malach. Mm-hmm. The malach can't act on its own.
But he disobeyed God. Abraham disobeyed.
The malach doesn't have the ability to come to you. You may have misheard the rabbi.
No, I didn't hear it wrong.
No?
No.
I didn't hear it wrong. No, no. You must have heard it wrong.
Abraham made a moral decision to listen to the malach.
I would have to ask Rabbi Kellermer about that, because because a malach is a shliach. Right. Malach doesn't have the ability to come up with its own words. So I find that hard. So therefore, as far as Avram's concerned, he was having a message from God. The question which one could ask is why the malach was sent and not God. Okay. I hear. Okay, yeah.
What is the last universally accepted gezerah?
Just a test?
No. Just always wanted it. Don't carry a shofar on Shabbos. This is, from the time of the mother.
I don't know what.
What is the last gadol?
I mean,
kidneys.
When I say kidneys, I don't know.
Kidneys isn't universally accepted.
No, but he wasn't saying universally. He says, when's the last?
He said universally.
Oh, universal.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Even Eretz Yisrael, though, Rosh Hashanah is celebrated 2 days, right?
Right, and that's a discussion in Baal Ma'or.
You're going to end up hearing the shofar during Rosh Hashanah.
But interesting, the Baal Ma'or writes that for 1,000 years he was arguing with the Ramban there. Baal Ma'or held that for 1,000 years they held one day in Eretz Yisrael.
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah, he disagreed with them. Yeah. It's a big Indian over there. But your point is well taken. In other words, they never would have enacted such a gezeira. But what about carrying lulav on Shabbos?
Mm-hmm. Well, same thing. The next day. Oh, that's
no. Israel's one day.
But you still bench lulav in that road.
Oh, so you want to say?
Moed, so.
Point well taken. The contemporary scene offers illustrations of plenty of. Let's go. However, the concept of developing morality can prove acceptable and helpful if it is based upon the Torah laws and Torah morality. See, now what he's going to do, he said, look, Torah knows that within the Torah, we have the ability given to the Rabbanim to expand the Torah based on the needs of the time. Needs of the time could be, how he's going to put it, a developing morality. However, what he's going to say now, expanding, or how you're interpreting this, can only be done within the confines of Torah understanding, or Torah rules, the Yud Gimel Midas, however you want to put it. It has to be within. It's just not. It can't be just something separate of an independent morality. However, the concept of development run can prove acceptable and helpful if it is based upon the Torah laws and Torah morality. The moral reasoning for which we attempt to circumvent a biblical mandate must itself issue from or be compatible with the Torah and mitzvos. A reasoning based upon the profound belief that the Torah is the source and confirmation of moral excellence, and that, to quote an oft-repeated teaching of the Rav, the 13th Ani Mamen of the Rambam is the belief that Torah is viable and applicable to each individual generation. Hence, in each of these cases mentioned above, the new standard we must seek to implement and which apparently conflicts with previously recognized Torah law has roots in the Torah and is the new only in the sense that has only recently emerged into our own moral awareness and gained traction in our consciousness. In other words, I think just on a side, I would say what Rabbi Lam is going to say, you will never be able to say that homosexuality is a moral act. That you will never be able to see, because you can't contradict what's in the Torah. You can't say that the Torah one time is immoral. What you can say is that it was a moral standard for a certain time, and later on there may be a new moral standard that prevents you to continuing an action. But there's a very big difference. I think that he's saying...
Can you explain that again? I'm not following what you're saying.
In other words, there is a moral understanding. The Torah was always moral. It may have been for a particular generation and later generations in order to better protect that generation. There is a need for a siyag, or there's a need for another halacha in order to accommodate that morality, i.e. yibum.
Why don't you, maybe you could do a specific example. Like, how would this apply to homosexuality today?
So what I'm saying. Homosexuality, we can now say, okay, now it's permitted to have homosexuality.
Okay, so what's the practical
but you could say
about
refrain.
Change in morals?
You just gave it. Yibum?
No. I'm saying if you're saying homosexuality, you can't change the fact that the act, and it's
right.
Not, for being gay, there's nothing in the Torah that says you can't be gay. It just says you can't perform a homosexual act.
Right.
That's clear. So if. How today is the change in morals affect what the Torah
requires? I would say a very simple thing. Can you give him an aliyah? Mm-hmm. I would say I can understand and come a point to say, he's a chote in one area. However, the way we would look, let's say, as a non-Shomer Shabbos 200 years ago, and a non-Shomer HaShabbos today, I believe, is two different ways of looking at it. For example, during, I think it was pre-World War, it was between the Sridi Eish and the Rugachevah. And the question was asked, a person had to find the brother, two brothers. There were three brothers. One brother dies, have to do Chalitza. You have a choice between one brother converted, and one brother's not Shomer Shabbos. It must have been a very chashuv family. Right? And so the Rugachevah said, anyone you want. Choose anyone you want. Doesn't matter. Why? Mumur ka'akum. The non-Shomer Shabbos, who's a mumur, is like considered like a guy. The Sri Deyesh couldn't accept that. To look at a non-Shomer Shabbos ka'akum. Now, it's state. I think this really age said, because today's non-Shomer Shabbos is not like any Al Tahayim. It's a different... So in that sense, I think that's where... I think Rabbi Lam even wrote about this in homosexuality. I've got to find his article. But I think that's what he argues. In others. It's not an acceptance of the act, but it's a greater acceptance of the person with the notion. That already is...
But
we're not saying he's acting morally. We're not saying that.
Would the same thing apply with somebody who's not Shomer Shabbos? Let's say, you know, you have a bar mitzvah, you have non-religious relatives come.
Can they light one of the candles?
You give them an aliyah.
Can they light one of the candles at the bar mitzvah? Remember those days?
I'm asking the less important question. Can you give them an aliyah?
I don't know. That uncle didn't get to light the candles. There was a pretty big fight after.
I'm asking something about less importance than lighting the candle. Can you get an aliyah at the... Can you give him an aliyah?
You know, with Rabbi Kellermer,
he walks
always,
in, he doesn't right, drive right,
right
out. He's respectful. Drives.
Right. And Rabbi Kellermer has said in the past when they've given such individuals, did you see him being Mechal of Shabbos?
Right.
That's right.
Don't listen to the Lashon Hara.
Right. Don't. Right.
How about.
What if he did? That's an example of what you're talking
about. Maybe the tshuva walking up the stairs.
How about
a gay person?
We just.
Let's just talk about it. I don't know. I'm not the rabbi of the shul, but I could see it already. I'm more of an accepted stance.
How about,
but not now, in the future.
How about,
yeah, but we have so much
how
to read.
Should we want to lose a touch?
No, it is not. You're taking away a place where we could have good bread rolls. What is your wrong with you? It is not, therefore, a matter of judging the Torah from the vantage of our newly acquired superior morality. It is not a generally novel historical moral conception that we pit against biblical moral tradition, but it is the evolving contemporary consciousness that has encouraged us to rediscover what was always there in the inner folds of the biblical text. You hear this? It was always there. It just, you have to dig it out. Our moral sensitivity leads us to find a warrant in the Torah heritage. There is no justification for totally independent and autonomous moral doctrine to cancel out a biblical commandment. No matter how hard and earnestly we try to force halacha into the Promethean bed of our subject, you know, with Rabbi Lamb, it's difficult enough. I mean, you have to sit there with a thesaurus and a dictionary. If you really want to just feel stupid, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, which has three words to a line, I don't think anyone understands. Bed of our subjective conception of morality. The conclusion has the ring of inauthenticity. See, that's what he's saying. You can't uproot totally from the Torah. You can't say, no, whatever the Torah, it's nonsensical. That you can't say. But we are not merely spiritual technicians who have no moral compass to guide us. That is, whereas we cannot create a new morality to oppose the biblical one, we most certainly are free to exercise our judgment and experience in searching out authority in the biblical and rabbinic traditions to identify elements in Judaism that supports a limitation or alternative to the original doctrine. Our goal must be the attainment of moral propriety in the name of which we seek to revise the formal halachic ruling, which is itself derived from halachic principles or clear Jewish teachings. He's very much overemphasizing this over and over. You can use through Torah ideas, through later poskim, how to, I don't want to say manipulate, but how to approach something which is written in the Torah that today we find repugnant. In other words, the concept, let's say, of Avdus, which I guess he would argue to say, in its time, this was the best mode of punishment for a person who was a ganav. You don't put him in prison. You have to pay off. But even within the Torah, how did you treat him? If you had one pillow, he had to have two pillows. It's not the opposite. You have a bagel, he gets the bagel, and you get the whole. It's just, there was a way of treating the Eved, right? Even then, so within that construct, the way Rabbi Lamb would say is that it came a time where we would say, I know the Torah says you're allowed to have avdus, but the way the society has developed, and they wouldn't appreciate, I'm throwing in words, wouldn't appreciate the notion of the Torah, we have to refrain from that idea. The idea of yibum, the idea of having more than one wife, right? The idea about smoking on Tisha B'Av, what's the big deal? But that's the way the world would look at us. So we refrain from this. We are not free to arrogate to ourselves the right to invent new ethical and moral doctrines in opposition to Torah, but we are free indeed compelled to use our creative moral and halakhic reasoning to reveal the latent moral judgments of the Torah that may contradict what we have previously accepted as the only doctrine in Torah. Rav Nachum Eliezer Rabinovich and Mali Yedumim, the author of a thoughtful essay on the Torah as a cause for evolution of moral values in history, offers illustrations of gradual mitigation of the institution. Illustrations of gradual mitigation of the institution of slavery, aiming at its total abolition, the acceptance of warfare as temporary measure until the universal peace is achieved, and other such major issues, all of which are grounded in Torah itself. For instance, in the case of slavery, the opposition principle of ki avodai heim, see, this is going to show, there was addition of slavery, but we say ki avodai heim, they are my avodim. that all humans are servants of the Creator, and hence you must discourage slavery to a human master. There is sufficient halachic data to support the abolition of the institution of slavery. In the case of capital punishment, the opposing principles to sanction sanctity of life, and the creation of man is in the image of God. Notice, when you have different principles in the Torah conflicting with each other, the choice before us in such cases is the tension between Torah's explicit legislation versus Torah's implicit value system.
Which is open to interpretation?
Yes. But that interpretation...
On a generational level.
Yes.
Which constantly changes.
Yes. And that is left, but that is not left to Yoyli.
What?
Him. It is left. It's left. It is. It has to be. It has to be through those who have knowledge of the Torah principles, have the authority. Now, we're not going to leave it to every individual to come to his own notion. Yeah, you could take on a certain chumrah for yourself.
Whatever happened to Gadol B'chochma Minyan? You have to have from one generation if you want to change the siyag or the halacha of the previous generation,
it's
they have
takana.
To be
gadol. Yeah, by a takana, not by Torah. It's part of the. It's. I have to think about it. But what you're asking is a bigger question. Why is it that true only by takanas and gezeiros? It's not true by Torah law. You have more power today to change something from the Torah. In other words, like the way Rabbi Lam is describing it. Than to override Kitnius. It's a good, it's an interesting question. Why is that? You
so
can't
you
override
Kitnius.
You'll
get a bigger argument from someone about changing, holding one day or 2 days Yom Tov, right. As opposed to the mores and the current moral standard on homosexuality.
Right.
Right. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. That one is held, I don't want to call it more important one, but the one that's the basis for the way we live our life is more open to interpretation than a decision made by a group of Rabbanim 300 years ago that we still have to hold to, even though the reasons don't exist anymore.
Are you saying the classic example is 30, 40 years ago, nobody held, if you went to Israel for Yom Tov, 1.5 or 1 days, and today everyone's taking it upon themselves to
yeah,
no,
that,
what
that,
they want.
No, no, no. Okay.
No, it's one.
There is a difference between the Jew who paskins for himself out of convenience and the Jew who goes over to his Rav and asks him how he paskins. A little bit of a difference.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that what in essence, if I understand it correctly, the absolute, the document, for lack of a better word, that we hold as supreme, the Torah, is open to interpretation by different generations of Rabbanim.
Right.
And we can possibly, not we, they can paskin based on the current moral standards of their generation.
They have to paskin according to their moral standards.
On the other hand, a geder that was put into place hundreds of years ago by Rabbanim, based on what was the current situation then, that's not open to interpretation.
So
we have to hold on.
I'll give you an answer to that based on the Anshei Shem. What was it called? The Anshei Shem, Chidusha Anshei Shem. Get rid of what they were. Simasecha Shabbos, and the discussion was, you know, if you have enough money for one thing, either between Yayin for Kiddush, let's say, I think in Neiros, so someone said, okay, no, so do it on the bread, because, you know, for the bread, you know, you could do it instead of Yayin. Then he says, what about if you have only Neiros money for Chanukah versus Yayin for Kiddush? I think that was the question. So the answer would be, listen, you can get out of Yayin for Kiddush. Just make it on Challah. But he said, no, you make sure you have money, take care of the Chanukah. He doesn't say because you could have gotten out of it. He gives it a very different reason. whenever you have a mitzvah de Rabbanan versus even a mitzvah d'oraisa, but the mitzvah de Rabbanim, you won't be able to perform it except for this one time of the year. The mitzvah de Rabbanim overrides the d'oraisa, the chidush ayin sheshem. Unbelievable. Why is that? It is so necessary for the Rabbanim to have their power. The Gemara in Beitza says it immediately. It's so necessary to follow the Chachamim's power, because if you don't, all of Torah falls apart. Because the Torah cannot exist in one generation. It has to be able to generation. No, this is his own Svara. He doesn't quote it. This is his unbelievable Chidush Ayin Sheshem. On top of that, I can show you 100 different sources. This will be one of them, of to show where the Takana de Rabbanim, the Gemara says that we possibly, let's say by Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to versus Yom Tov versus Shabbos, there were more Machmer and Yom Tov when it comes to Muktzah versus Shabbos. And why is it? Because a lot of Yom Tov, especially Segnei, is all the Rabbanans. Because when it comes to the Rabbanim, we'll say, no, it's only the Rabbanim. No, it's, we're worried about you being mevaza the Divrei Chachamim, so we give them even more power.
What's the date cutoff for a Rabbanim? I mean, if tomorrow somebody says, oh, this is a Rabbanim, it's not a Rabbanim.
What do you mean by that?
In other words, if somebody...
there were certain things we're not allowed to create today, but, and certain things we are allowed. I mean, the Rabbanim still have...
Who are the Rabbanim?
Yeah. That's for another discussion
decides,
of the Gedolei Hador.
And I think
that's part of Golis, that we don't have a notion of a Sanhedrin. We don't have
no
a clear understanding.
No,
so there's a famous Rav. So there's a famous thing that the Rav said when we say Yehovah Rabbim, you go by the Rabbim. The Rav says, yeah, that's only true. We're all in the same room arguing with each other. So the Gadol even could be a Yochid. He had the ability to turn to the others and explain to them why they were wrong. He says, today we don't have conversations. You know. So therefore, we don't have the idea of Yehovah Rabbim, to go by the Rabbim.
So how far back does that go? When do you last have this situation?
It hasn't been. That's why we have machlokas in the world. But we have to have a Selech
HaRav. What was the scenario where Rav Soloveitchik was in the room with Rav Kotler?
What about it?
Didn't they have some kind
of first of all, they were very
slightly contentious interaction?
They did, but they were very friendly.
I agree with you.
Like in everyone else. They did have something when it came to...
like your story with Rav Sender, Rav Kotler, if you disagree with me anymore...
Yeah.
Finish it?
No, he said, I will argue with you publicly.
I will argue with you publicly.
And the Rav felt that he would win the argument in the end.
Was that the last time we ever had any...
No, we haven't all the time.
...statue in the room together at the same time? No.
Oh, I mean, not so much with the... modern Orthodox and the Haredi world as much, but the Rav Shechter has, they don't argue the way they used to argue. That's all. Anyhow. By the same token, the idea of refraining from harming civilian non-combatants, although it has no explicit origin in the Torah, reflects the Torah value of thou shalt not kill. And the father shall not put to death the sins of the children, neither shall the children be put to the death the sins of the fathers. Every man shall be put to death for his own sin. Likewise, the reluctance to implement even theoretically the Torah's stern commandments concerning Amalek and the seven nations, this is Jimmy was not here for this, bespeaks the later development that always inhered latently in the Torah itself. This may be looked upon as a non-technical kind of lifnim meshuras hadin, which... superagatory nature is part of the Torah itself. You know, I was giving you, by the way, these talks about not killing innocent civilians is a famous medrash that Avram Avinu was so concerned that he lost his chelek of Eretz Yisrael because maybe in his war during the Mechama of the Dal Malachim against the Hay Malachim that maybe he killed an innocent civilian. So, you're right, it's not in the Torah itself, but in Medrash, rabbinic thought immediately was worried about that. Mention should be made of situation ethics, that in recent decades has been much discussed, a movement that rejects code morality and in generalizations in favor of moral judgments made for particular and usually non-replicable situations. Some aspects of it may be legitimately useful for solving a problem. Situational contextual morality need not be attentive with moral relativism. While its original formulations argued for every few general rules, primarily love, and manifold set specific details of the individual enough to regard him and this situation as unique, we are not obliged to accept this as indivisible doctrine. We may well prefer to judge qualities of our conduct by a far larger number of rules. Let's see, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has demonstrated that Judaism rejects contextualism, another word for situational ethics, as a self-sufficient ethic, but nevertheless has embraced it as the modus operandi of a large tract of human experience. There lie in the realm of Lefnim Meshurash HaDin. In this area, the halachic norm is itself situational, right? Lefnim Meshurash HaDin, for a particular situation. He invokes the Ramban. Identify morality, Lefnim Meshurash HaDin, thus keeping morality within the bounds of halachic tradition. If we recognize that halacha is multiplanar and many-dimensional, that I properly concede it includes much more than is explicitly required or committed by specific rules, we shall realize that the ethical moments we are seeking is in itself the aspect of halacha. Now, let's get this. A corollary of this elevated aspiration is the stricter criterion of conduct expected of people of higher station. This allowed the tradition to imply the violation of unstated superior standards, where the biblical text appears overly harsh. Thus, here are a number of examples where the sages confronted the scriptural text describing punishment ordained for a transgression. A punishment puzzled them by its severity, and which they attempted to mitigate by reading more grave infractions into the bare text. For example, Nadav and Avihu. Sons of Aaron were consumed by fire, apparently meaning that they were struck by lightning. During the service in the tabernacle, because Torah tells us, they offered up a strange fire. So severe a penalty for so slight a transgression certainly appears unjust. So the rabbi speculated that two sons of Aaron were guilty of far more serious conduct than indeed merited draconian punishment. Thus, they were arrogant in making legal decisions in the presence of their elders, right? It's one of them, specifically Moshe. They were overweening in ambitions, entertaining hopes, etc. They give all the, in other words, the Chachamim itself are looking in the Tanakh. Why should it be to have all of the, why should they have been punished so viciously? So they came up with different, what was bothering the Chachamim there? It was their sense of morality that seems to be a little bit too much. Hold on. Look at the next. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik maintains that according to the medieval classic Sefer Chassidim, there is a place in Judaism for ever higher levels of morality. We find in the Torah that anyone who is capable of understanding a demand, even though he was not explicitly commanded, this is very important. Chaim Soloveitchik is arguing that inside the Torah, there is always a place for an ever higher level of morality. We find in the Torah that anyone who is capable of understanding a demand, even though he was not explicitly commanded, is punished for not realizing the requirement on his own. Give me an example. The will of God of the Ratzon Habore has not been cabined or confined within overt dictates of the Torah, written or oral. These newly discovered norms of the author, Rabbi Yehuda, and his fellow pietists in medieval Germany allow for newer and greater forms of morality and certainly should not be dismissed simply because they have no explicit recognition in either the written or oral law. Further, again in the words of Soloveitchik, the Piyutim had discovered God's will in his plenitude, and surely obedience to this was not optional. Thus, there were two sources of authority for the Chassid, and these two revelations, the explicit and the implicit, should hardly be conceived of as competing poles of allegiance, but as concentric circles emanating from a unitary divine will, the outer perimeter of which takes on meaning only because of the wide ambience of the inner. The creativity of Sefer Hasidim lies not in imposing moral considerations that arise independently of Torah, but in tapping the wellsprings of Torah, locating implicit in them ideas and values that constitute more sublime moral ideas. Rabbi Lamb is trying to say, and in Hasidus, I showed you this idea from the Nesiv HaShalom, every statement in the Torah, implicitly within it, has very deep moral considerations. And within the Torah itself, it's almost a saying, this is true at this point in time. At a second point in time, there may be a greater other Torah moral imperative that will require you not to follow this particular. And this particular morality is probably, the way he's putting it, is more of a lesser, is a lesser moral standard.
Could you give an example?
Slavery. Amalek. That's what he's saying. At one point in time, it was a categorical imperative. And then, or it was it needed for a certain generation. Later on, other ideas, he's arguing, other ideas will prevent you from following that derech.
But doesn't the fact that the Torah commands...
Very dangerous idea.
Amalek.
I'm not going to describe.
It's not just Amalek, it's a derech. We're commanded to remember Amalek.
We're commanded
so
to,
when you say
to carry.
Amalek,
we're commanded to carry
saying,
the lulav
no,
7 days.
No, there's not going to come a time where.
Belakachtem b'yom harishon. We're commanded to do it. Belakachtem b'yom harishon. Take the lulav on the first day. Very explicit. Doesn't say b'yom sheni, b'yom shlishi.
But what I'm saying is it's not just that we're commanded to destroy Amalek. We're commanded to remember Amalek.
To remember him.
Right. So we're not supposed to, like, to me, the implication might
be... He didn't say forget.
Something. What?
He didn't say forget it. He doesn't say there's no mitzvah in the Torah. He's just saying that right now...
So the morality's changing. Now we don't do what we normally do in Amalek. We
cannot commit genocide at this point. That's what he's saying.
But then why is the Torah telling us...
Why does the Torah say, L'kachtem b'yom harishon? Don't get involved in emotional attachment in halacha. You have two halachas in front of you. One of them is destroying Amalek, one is Lakatna B'yom Harishon. Please explain to me why you doesn't bother you. Because you're not attached to Lulav. You don't care about the Lulav.
Because the mitzvah Lulav, of Lulav has nothing to do with morality. The mitzvah of
how
Lulav
do you know? Of course it is. It's part of the morality of following a divine will.
An example, I forgot who it was. There was a king who was commanded to totally wipe out all the men, women, and children.
Shaul.
Didn't do
Shaul.
It right.
Shaul.
And he was punished for that. So how does that fit into
it's
this
true.
Idea
it's a time. It's a different time
in
general.
Time, yeah.
It's a different time, yeah.
And how do you know this isn't a time when all that's what's going on?
I don't.
On,
I don't.
That
I
we're
don't.
Not supposed to be.
I don't.
Model.
Just everything within me teaches me that we're going to be in Or LaGoyim. I hope to God that we never do killing Amalek.
And you know what? And everything teaches me
that you
that
should.
We have a people who like throw terakites.
Did
and
you?
Fires.
He voted for Trump.
I only voted for the last three votes. That's a different issue.
Yeah.
The examples that you use.
And we go out of our way to punish Jews before we will them in many ways. That might be what's immoral.
How do you?
I would disagree. Yeah.
I understand.
All the examples that are given here are where you take a Torah law and you passively reject it.
Exactly.
So there are
things
that we
consider
today immoral. Forget about homosexuality, but let's say mamzerus, where this child is clearly innocent of any immoral thing, and yet he is subject to certain rules. Mm-hmm. And there is no passive way to get
there
that.
Is the way they do with the Rabbanim is that they find, you know, a lot of the Ramosha's tshuvas that then never was a marriage. Somehow they postulate the first marriage, so the child is not considered a mamzer. They do. They very much try to stop the idea of the mamzer. But if you have 100% kosher marriage, and then you commit, you know, then the woman commits adultery, and that child is going to be a mamzer. There's nothing we could do about that. It's something which will be painful and we'll be anguished by it, but we will not, you cannot, but we can't stop the idea of mamzeris. You know.
I think I was reading in Cordoza something about ignoring mamzeris.
We don't ignore them, we make them president.
Now, Obama,
are they
Mamzer
in
the
world? Or Europe used to say, send him to America, 10 generations, he'll be okay.
Oh, Obama's not president then.
No, I'm talking about president of Ashur. It's a very difficult idea what Rabbi Lam is saying. He has been attacked for it, I know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Rabbi Lam is attacked?
Yeah, would you believe it? The greatest line I heard Rabbi Lam once said, "Oseh chadashos, baal milchamos." If you're going to be mevchadish something, you're going to be in a milchama. But his idea speaks, I think, really speaks to. It helps to speak to this generation. We do have qualms with a set. With again, he said, "I'm not referring to the new morality." Or the sexual revolution that really that he was referring to in the 60s. You know, that sexual revolution is immoral. It was immoral. It will always remain immoral within Judaism, within halacha. Nevertheless, there is the possibility of other ideas which our moral compass, he feels those ideas of modern, the moral compass, can somehow curtail a certain categorical imperative in the Torah passively. Because within the Torah, and this is the important part, within the Torah, there are other Torah principles which would cause you to do so. It's a very difficult idea. But it's different than saying, for instance, I don't want, you know, Yisoska Katz was simply saying to me that homosexuality, or he goes even further, the fact that in his opinion that we have this women's rights, you know, not being counted a minion or, you know, however you want to put it, he said it is immoral to him. And therefore he has trouble with the Torah. There Rabbi Lam would say to him, that's wrong. Your autonomous sense of morality has no business here. Within the moral understanding of the Torah, we can come to a change. There's a nuance. It's a very slight nuance, but I think it's important.
Well, specifically on that point, the Torah, is there a place in the Torah where it says a woman can't be counted a man?
Well, he was talking about everything.
Same
with
every.
Is there a place that
says
that
women are unequal to men?
No, it doesn't. We don't say that.
In Judaism,
in his sense, you think
it is.